the dawn of the age of Aquarius, and Gen Z are letting their voices be heard. From Bulgaria to Bangladesh, from Nepal to Ecuador, mass political upheaval is happening across almost every continent since 2022. So could the West be in some very early stages? And should the power brokers start getting worried? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Tara Duggan. In country after country, it's been young people, Gen Z, driving mass demonstrations against corruption, unemployment, and even an overall political arrogance. In Nepal and Madagascar, those protests actually brought down governments. Elsewhere, from Kenya to Morocco, they forced crackdowns, concessions, and global attention. What's striking is how similar the grievances sound, despite vastly different political systems. Corruption, lack of opportunity, rising costs, and a sense that the future is unattainable. This is a generation that grew up online, watching inequality in real time and seeing how politicians live, how power protects itself, and how little accountability there can often be. They're also critically more connected than any generation before them. Tactics, symbols, and momentum travel fast, from TikTok to Telegram, from Nairobi to Kathmandu. But these movements are, strangely enough, leaderless, and they're often spontaneous. And that raises a bigger question. Is this a revolutionary moment or just a release of pressure? To help us unpack why Gen Z's become the generation of protest, I'm joined now by Examiner columnist Jane Cowan, who's been following these movements closely. So, Jane, if we start really with, you know, repeating some of the list of the countries involved that have undergone some scale of political upheaval in the last few years: Bulgaria, Nepal, Iran, Israel, Sudan, Syria, Afghanistan, Bangladesh, Haiti, Ecuador, Madagascar, and more recently maybe even Venezuela, to some extent the United States. The big question, I suppose, is what's happening here?
I think a really interesting thing is happening in the past few years. Everyone my age, we've kind of come into political consciousness, and we've been able to do that through social media. I mean, I think ask many people my age and they'll say the death of George Floyd was, you know, a really pivotal moment in them becoming aware of these systems happening around them. I think social media has a lot to do with that.
But if I equate that to my generation, and I'm a Gen Xer, you know, our families read newspapers as a matter of course in the house every day. We would have had TV news on, radio news bulletins. So all of those things were there. What makes it so different from reading it, seeing the visuals on TV, listening to news reports on radio, to actually seeing it in the palm of your own hand?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, Marshall McLuhan said the medium is the message. And I think there's such an immediacy to seeing these videos on your phone, and translating an event into print in a newspaper kind of has this effect of sanitizing it, because you don't see it fully. You just, you know, language does have that sort of effect on events. And I mean, this of course happened when radio was introduced and when television was introduced. You know, these upheavals, people were more aware of them. They were more able to be more aware of them. And now I don't have to seek out any sort of political information. If I go onto my phone, my friends are posting about it. It's flooding my Instagram. So it's kind of difficult for Gen Z to be disengaged from politics.
And maybe the images also, there's not an editorialization of them. I mean, I think of growing up during times of the Troubles in Northern Ireland, but many times the images that we would have seen on the TV news would have been, for want of a better word, sanitized. Certainly there was an editorial control. We maybe didn't see the brutality that we would have seen, for example, in the George Floyd case.
Absolutely. And, you know, we saw recently Renee Good being shot by ICE. And then we saw the disjunction between the video, unedited, that we all saw on our Instagrams, our TikToks, and how people in power were trying to frame the situation. And I think that disjunction was a really important thing for us all to recognise.
And in the Renee Good case, maybe there were more camera angles and we saw it from different sides.
Absolutely.
But is there a concern, or would you have a concern, that sometimes what the younger generation are actually seeing online is just one side of the story in some cases?
Yeah, I think, of course, the way algorithms work on Instagram and TikTok, whatever you engage with, you'll be fed more of that because, of course, they want you to stay on Instagram for longer. So you do have to be, I think media literacy is really important. I think people aren't always aware that the content they're consuming, the person delivering it, isn't the same as, you know, the Irish Times or a really, you know, good source of news. They often have a political agenda. Like, I think Donald Trump's election would have many very conservative podcasters to thank. And I think that's true for many people in power.
Does that concern you? That
absolutely.
And how do you address that? How do you overcome that as a generation? How do you get that message across to others of your generation that things that they are seeing do need to be questioned and tested?
Yeah, I think we're kind of becoming more aware of that. You know, when we were a little bit younger, it was new to us that people, you know, making this Instagram reel or whatever it is, could have an ulterior motive. So I think we're becoming more aware of it. I think it's talking about it, it's conversations like this and talking to your friends and questioning them when they say something and, you know, just ask them, are you sure that's true? I think that's a really important thing to be able to do with your friends. And like my, you know, I do that with my own friends and I find it really valuable.
Older farts like myself would maybe be concerned that in actual fact those conversations between friends aren't happening in the same way that they might have done for my generation or previous generations to me, because the interaction is also remote. It's online rather than face to face.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to be said for having those interactions in person. I think, you know, when we're talking about things online, people are so polarized by the information they receive online. That, you know, yeah, when you're trying to engage with people, it can be difficult to not, you know, that conversation not to become an echo chamber where we're just, you know, repeating each other and not really, you know, figuring anything out. So it's a massive concern.
Tell me about the feelings of Gen Zers in this modern world, though. Is there a common sense of disillusionment, and what's the root cause of it?
Yeah, I think there's kind of a loss of trust in a lot of our institutions. I mean, you know, they say we all live in two countries, our own and America. So when we see what things that are able to take place in the United States, and then we see that, you know, these systems that are there to protect us don't always work and they don't always do their job. And I think we've seen that so many times and we continue to see it. And we kind of question, you know, can we really trust the people that are supposed to have our best interests at heart? And I think we can see that that's not really true.
And there is this, again, common perception, misperception, perhaps, that Gen Z and younger generations aren't really engaged with politics, that they might see, you know, streams of consciousness or events, but that in actual fact, it just kind of goes by. It's just, you know, on the scroll and it's on to the next and on to the next and on to the next. Why do you think that we're seeing, particularly in other parts of the world, that is transcending into action?
Yeah, I think it's kind of easy to say that. I've heard that a lot, that, you know, Gen Z are not that interested in politics. But I think it kind of is translating into action because we have so few resources. You know, we're young, we don't yet occupy those positions of power. So one really valuable way of circumventing those systems, and also if you don't trust those systems, is protest, is your voice. So I think that's why it's become so widespread globally.
And why do you think Gen Z are in those cases where they do take action? It's taken to the streets.
Yeah.
I mean, we would have seen obviously protests with previous generations as well. But there really seems to be a compunction to take it onto the streets and to have those collective voices heard.
I mean, I think we see that talking about it on Instagram is clearly not enough. And social media isn't going to get us there. So I think that's why people say we have to go out and actually make our voices heard. I think we just know that our group chats or our Instagram posts obviously aren't going to get us very far.
These protests that are happening across very different countries, why do you feel that they're so connected, I suppose? Is it almost like a snowball effect that when, you know, younger people see protests happening and changes happening in one part of the world, it's almost nearly like a call to action?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, another effect of the smartphone is that when some atrocity happens in another country, it doesn't feel that far away from us. And so we're kind of invested in these things happening in other countries. And then if we have any fear of that taking place with our own, you know, we understand the instability and like the vulnerability of our own political landscape. And so I think that's why we're so motivated by what we see happening around us.
And there's, you know, we hear that a lot of these movements, and if you look at what's happening in Iran at the moment, essentially being an example of that, they're leaderless. Absolutely. In a way. What does that tell us, I suppose, about how this generation views power and authority?
Yeah, I think, well, you know, if you're trying to reform or break down a system that you don't believe in, it'd be sort of nonsensical to replicate the power hierarchy that system already uses. So we are quite egalitarian in that approach.
But if you look at the past, and if you take, for example, even in this country, the trade union movement.
Yeah.
You know, there were leaders. It did take, you know, precision and vision and a regaling of people to get that, to get those changes that were made. Can it really succeed wide scale if it is leaderless?
That's a question I have. About the, you know, that sort of egalitarian approach, you know, it's hard to be very organized without a one sort of figurehead. And I think that's something we're kind of navigating. But it's also, there's so many loud voices in these movements. It's difficult to, you know, figure out who that leader would even be.
And do you think that this is really about specific policies and crises? Or is it maybe more about a deeper loss of faith in political systems? Or is it a bit of moral outrage because we can?
I think there's a loss of faith. I think, you know, we're all, you know, Gen Z, we're late teens, early 20s, and we're looking to the future that is waiting for us. And people are, you know, they're not very hopeful if we don't do anything. It doesn't look like there's much of a future for a lot of us.
And be specific about that, Jane. What are you seeing globally? Are the trending issues, the commonality? What are the big concerns among the younger generation? Here, obviously, in Ireland, it's things like housing.
Yeah, of course.
It's things like employment, I suppose. It's prices. It's the cost of living. But is that what we're seeing globally? Are there certain touch points and commonalities that are common to the generation but that transcend nations?
Yeah, I think, of course, housing, unemployment, all of those things are massive issues. But I think, you know, with the internet, the idea of our free speech being eroded is massive, and I think that's global. And I think that probably has more immediacy than, you know, housing, cost of living, things like that for us. Because it's, you know, your very basic human rights. I don't know what a world looks like we have seen in history what a world looks like where you don't have freedom of speech. And that's a terrifying prospect for us.
And yet some people might argue that in actual fact there's too much speech and that it's unmoderated and that everyone can say what they think unchecked.
Absolutely. And that's a massive issue online. I mean, we've seen like X is just a cesspit, I think would be a fair way of saying it. But I think we also...
But X will say they are the upholders of free speech.
Yeah, they say that. And, you know, I don't know, is obviously regulation is a very dangerous thing. But I'm not sure that I believe them if they say they are upholding that.
But at the end of the day, Jane, is it not a case of if you can't beat them, join them? And though the structures that exist around power, I mean, look, in many of the places that we're talking about here are not democratic, but in democratic societies, it's that way, and it's been that way for decades and generations, because that way, it's not perfect, but at least it upholds democracy and it functions and there's shape and there's structure on it. Do you not think that in many instances, you know, these freedom fighters and the people who are, you know, engaged in this type of protest now, ultimately to make any real pertinent change ongoing, they kind of have to fit within the system rather than rail against it.
I understand, you know, you have to deal with the landscape that you're already in. But I think any like of our really like amazing change that has taken place in the past has been fought for, and it's been, you know, difficult to earn, like any movements for marriage equality, the right to vote for women, you know, they didn't get those things by quietly obeying the status quo and trying to do everything by the book. And I think we have a lot to learn from that.
But if you take marriage equality as an example in this country, you know, I mean, although society might have moved forward at a faster pace than the politicians did, they got on board. And ultimately, the changes that were made and the vote that was held was structured because the Oireachtas got on board. We had David Norris campaigning his entire political career for this. It took an awfully long time, but ultimately we have that change because of the position that those in authority took and the legislative changes and the proposals that they made to have that vote and change the law. So ultimately my point is that you kind of have to be within the system to change the system.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think a really important point when we're talking about marriage equality is that initially, you know, decades previous to this, when it was illegal to be gay in Ireland, it was a really radical thing then. And they were not, if you're fighting for gay rights at that stage in the 70s or 80s.
Even into the 90s.
Yeah.
Then. Yeah.
You weren't obeying the status quo. And I think it's those people that got us to a stage in 2015 where it was able to be a referendum and voted in. But I think the people that were radical in the past are the reason that society caught up.
And the fact that they wouldn't go away and that
Absolutely.
They kept their voices, you know, they kept their voices loud. Do you think Gen Z, Jane, is trying to reform the existing systems, or are they actually outright rejecting them?
It's hard to tell. I think we're rejecting them. I don't think we believe it anymore. You know, I think we feel like we've been sold something that's not true. And when we were younger, we were told like you could believe in people to do the right thing. And then we see like a genocide happening in Palestine for years. And I think we've just lost faith in trusting that if we just change this slight thing about the status quo, then everything will be sorted, because it hasn't. It doesn't seem to have worked so far.
And then you see a juggernaut like Donald Trump arrive and, you know, essentially threaten and just claim territory like Greenland, go in and take action like they did in Venezuela. Does that worry you that no matter how large these voices become, you know, at the end of the day, the power brokers are still, you know, the main economies in the world, and that they're just going to do what they want to do?
I think that's what people are trying to change. You know, they don't want, you know, one man to have the power to say, I'm going to make this decision and I'm not even really going to explain why, and I don't really need a valid reason why I'm doing it. I'm just doing it. I think that's exactly what we're railing against.
And your generation maybe blame mine and the one before it, the boomers, that you kind of just let this happen.
I don't know.
Do you view it as us letting it happen, essentially?
I personally don't. And, you know, it's kind of naive of me if I say that, you know, we're the first generation to ever, like, of young people to be trying to make political change, because, you know, any of the anti-Vietnam War protests in, like, in London in the 60s, it was young people at the front of those as well. So I don't think my parents are personally to blame for this. But I think, you know, we can see a lot of change happened in that generation and we can do more.
Okay. Looking ahead, do you think protest is becoming the default political language?
I think so. I think when you don't trust the systems to work for you and you don't have the power within those systems yet when you're young, I think protest allows you to get around that.
Is there an element of naivety?
Probably. And I think sometimes naivety isn't always a bad thing, because if you're a little bit hopeful that you have the power to make change, naivety is probably the only reason why people actually try to do these things. They think, you know, they've got hope, and I think that's all we can really have.
Jane, thank you very much. A very insightful debate. I think, you know, ultimately I have to agree with you. I think sometimes naivety can be a good thing, because sometimes if you're in full possession of the facts, it kind of clips your wings a little bit. But good luck to you and the rest of Gen Z with the campaigning and political change of the future. That's it from the podcast today. I'm Tara Duggan. You can access all of the News Talk Daily podcasts on Go Loud. And that's it for today. Chat to you tomorrow.